VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and/or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And somehow, when I wasn't looking, it turned into April, which means a third of this year is gone. And it's just beyond my ability to comprehend the way it's going by. On the other hand, if the market keeps doing what it's doing, I say go ahead and march forward.
I suppose.
It's pretty good. We will be talking a lot about the market today and a bunch of other things. You have until a week from Monday to file your taxes or file an automatic extension. And remembering that even if you file an extension, it doesn't get you out of paying. You still owe the money. You just don't have to file the form yet. And a week from Monday is coming up pretty quickly here.
Well, technically you don't have to pay, but then you're going to pay some penalties and interest.
Well, try not to throw away any more money than you have to when it comes to sending it to Uncle Sam. But anyway, back to the hello, everybody. Thank you for the regulars for always being here. We appreciate it. We will have a trivia question, as always, today. And if you're new to the show, either by accident or on purpose, whether you're driving by or whatever, try to stick around for an hour. We will, as usual, be putting callers ahead of everybody else. So if you have any questions, call them in, and we'll put you to the head of the line. That is what makes interesting talk radio to me, is when you change the subject for us and put us on the spot. Of course, you have to remember all the while that your job is to make us look good. So, and no questions too easy.
What is that number?
And that number, I was just coming to that.
All right.
Is back to normal.
Yay.
It's 222-TALK again, 904-222-8255. So you can forget that old silly number that we used for a week, at least for now. Who knows where that's going. But 222-TALK lines are open, and you will be treated like the important people that you are. All right, this week, what happened was more of the same. And in case that sounded like I wasn't really excited, nothing could be further from the truth. It has been very exciting for really, really good reasons. The market is doing the right thing right now. So we'll spend quite a little time on it. At this point, I'll turn over the fundamentals to my young cohort here, who should appreciate the fact that I am the one causing all of this because of my wisdom and age.
Oh, I thought you sold on Monday or something.
Then it would have been up more.
True. Yeah, it was kind of a quiet week, but it was...
Yeah, it seemed...
I was doing the numbers this morning, or last night, actually, and I was kind of surprised how good it was. Yeah. In fact, I would go so far as to say great.
Well, that's what happens when you go a whole week without having a big backup day.
Yeah.
Usually one day in the week we'll have a big backup day, so you're kind of up in the air.
We really didn't see that. It was very tame all week. One day we saw a pretty big move to the upside, and then the rest of the week was pretty flat, but all positive. Almost all positive.
Yeah.
But the NASDAQ managed to gain 2.7%. The S&P 2.1, and the Dow just under 2%. So the NASDAQ is almost up 20% this year. Crazy. And the S&P is up more than 15, the Dow just over 13. And since Christmas Eve of last year, when the market did a sharp turnaround, the S&P has rallied a pretty astonishing 18.7%.
And it experienced what we were talking about. We had our golden cross.
Oh, we did. We did. And, The fourth quarter was the worst quarter in 7 years, and the first quarter was the best quarter in nearly 10 years. How crazy is that?
It has happened before a couple times where we had these sharp reversals like that, but it's not something you would call routine at all.
No, definitely not. Some of the winners this week were small caps and mid caps. They outperformed their larger counterparts by about 1%. From a sector perspective, materials led the way higher, gaining over 4%, while financials, communications, services, and consumer discretionary all gained more than 3%. The laggard that we saw was consumer staples, which dropped about 1%. But even that is not a big move
down. What does that mean? It means money is moving to the discretion side, which means people are they're positive because they're looking around saying people are going to be buying things because they want to, not because they have to stay alive.
Right.
That's
and it's
very
also
optimistic.
It's a move out of that's a defensive sector, and, mm-hmm. and discretionary is more of a cyclical sector. So, yeah, like you were saying, that's a really positive sign for people realizing that we are not headed right into a recession. Internationally, we saw some markets rally this week. China gained more than 7%, which was by far the best market internationally, and Mexico gained more than 5.5%. Europe saw similar gains to the U.S., so the rally wasn't limited to the home front for once.
The Chinese market, though, is reflective of the attitude of people there and here that this Chinese trade negotiation deal is going to become settled here pretty soon.
Yep.
That's the reason anybody would be that optimistic. China's up 100% this year.
No, not 100.
Yeah.
No, 30 something.
Well, okay, 100 from its low then.
Yeah, that might be.
Okay.
One thing, I don't know, it kind of flew under the radar, but Trump actually signed a memo aiming to crack down on the sale of counterfeit goods online this week. And that was really the conventional wisdom said it was Amazon and eBay and those types of companies that do third-party resale. It was really to tell them, look, you guys need to check anyone that's selling through you, you need to check out and make sure it's not counterfeit goods coming from, where do you think? China.
Oh, China.
Yeah. So I don't know if that was directly related to the negotiations. It probably was in some way, but I hadn't seen it tied anywhere. But that was my first thought when I saw that.
It might have been something that wasn't discussed, but it was a shot across the bow.
Yeah, exactly. Because you know that if they said they did a test and 40% of the goods that the government tested were counterfeit, sold from those sites, that's a really high number. And you have to think that at least half of those came from China.
Yep.
Oil got in on the action this week, too, gaining more than 5%, kept the commodities index moving up by about 1.7. Gold and silver all posted modest losses, but really nothing to be concerned about. Fixed income didn't fare as well. It was more of a risk-on week, so you saw long treasuries drop by about 1.5%, and the overall bond market dropped under 0.5%. So not unusual when people are really more focused on buying equities. There isn't much really not to like about the market right now. Is it near an all-time high? Yep.
Yep.
Is there some uncertainty around the economic data? Yeah.
Yep.
Not as much as last week, though, I will say that. Is the breadth strong? Yep. Did we see a golden cross on just about every major index this week?
S&P and the NASDAQ this week alone.
Is momentum positive? Yep.
Yep.
Is the economy pretty strong? Yep. And are people working and incomes rising? Yep.
All of the above.
Not a lot of holes to be found right now, especially, I mean, the only people you really see punching holes in this are the ones that have an agenda.
Right. So I told Adam when he got here that I had just heard Stuart Varney on Fox saying, there's no recession out there. And then he really opened my eyes, Adam, saying, I just read that on Yahoo News.
I saw a recession.
If you are a news follower, as we are with the Yahoo people, every chance they get to slam Trump, you can bet they are going to take that chance. They want him out of there so badly. When they admit something like this, first off, it's got to be as plain as a nose on our faces. But second, then you start to get wondering, what are they getting at? You feel like there's got to be some kind of a motivation in that, too, and I'm not sure what it is.
I'm not sure.
We'll be watching the news this week.
Anyways, we've got some more economic data to get to, but we'll do that after the break.
We particularly want to talk about the jobs report, mm-hmm. which just pretty much blew everybody away. And there's some things that they aren't talking about that they should be talking about. We'll get to those very shortly. Got to take a short break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this week's trivia question brought to you, as usual, by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. And you can call Ken at 904-636-7888. And you can call Adam and Steve at 904-222-8255. Whatever is on your mind today. Well, we had the Golden Cross, as I mentioned in the first segment. For the S&P 500, that's when the 50-day moving average. The stock moves above 50-day, which crosses the 200-day on the move up. In other words, it's just a bullish sign that it's rising really quickly. And it has happened before, but it is quite rare. Now, my question is, over the next 12 months after a golden cross, what has been the performance of the S&P 500 index? I'll take it. It's got to be which direction, up or down, and I'll take it within one percentage point of the actual. So how has the S&P 500 performed after a golden cross? All right. Jobs. You want a job?
Yeah, let's talk jobs.
Go get one.
But first, you have a blinking light.
Yeah, I do, but I don't have a name.
That's all right. Pick it up anyway.
Good morning, Nameless.
Hey, this is Al.
Hey, Al.
I gave you my name. I was just calling in. I had to give you a high five on Ken Bales.
Yeah?
Yeah, I had him over to fix my alarm on Monday, and
great.
He did an excellent, super job.
Wonderful. He did our office and he did our home.
He's done some work at my house, too.
Yep.
Yeah, he did an excellent job. I just wanted to put out some high fives on him, okay?
I like great. It. I like it a lot. Did you want to take a shot at a trivia question today?
No, what's the question again?
It's what has been the one-year performance immediately following a golden cross on the S&P 500 index, which we just had, historically?
Oh, I don't know. This is going to be a guess. I'm going to say about 3%.
You're too low, but that tells us two things. It tells us that it's positive because it can't be negative if 3% is too low, and it tells us that's too low. So it's obviously a very good technical sign and is one more reason for some optimism for investors everywhere.
Right.
All right, we appreciate it, and so does Ken, I'll tell you. The thing I like best about them is when they're out of there, it looks so professional. There's no damage. Everything's tied up. They're really neat people.
He had to straighten out the box. I mean, the box is a mess, you know.
Did the same thing to mine when mine was failing its old system. So.
Yeah, when the wires, you know, when they put the wires in years ago, they crisscrossed them around. It probably took him 30 or 40 minutes to even clean that out.
It sounds so familiar, believe me.
I was really impressed. I really was.
Great. Well, we love it, and we don't endorse anything or anybody that we haven't tried. And
no, definitely not.
Very important to us for reputation purposes. So we appreciate the call. You have a great Saturday.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Nice little plug for our friend. That's a good thing. All right. If you don't have a job and you want one, just go get one. They're everywhere. Take it from there.
All right. So, let's talk jobs. Not just jobs, but economic data actually looked pretty darn good this week, I thought.
Yeah, something going on now, and I'll tell you what it is. I already told you what it is. I spent 2 months telling us what
it was.
It
was the government shutdown. It had to be.
Because you got economic, what's the word I'm looking for? Chaos, I guess, because of that. But more so, I think, the people who tabulate the numbers were in chaos for a long time, and I told everybody not to take anything for granted about the numbers in the first quarter, and now I think you're starting to see some normality come
up. Yeah. Let's start with the headline number. Non-farm payrolls, they beat expectations and came in at 196,000 for March. And previous months were also revised up. I know it's shocking. I think we might have said that was going to happen. And the unemployment rate remained the same at 3.8%, which is really strong. Hourly earnings rose by 0.1%, which is respectable, and weekly jobless claims dropped back down to 202,000, which is a crazy low number considering they are not indexed for population growth.
49-year low.
If you look at annual wage growth, it's now up 5.2% from last year, and everybody keeps saying that, but salaries aren't going up. It's just not true. They are.
It's only the rich who are participating.
No, it's absolutely, that is such a
The lower
line.
You are on the deciles of the earnings scale, the faster your wages are growing.
Yeah, but the narrative that they're pushing is again, it's for an agenda, but look, wages are going up. People that were not previously employable under the last economy are now being employed, and they're making more money.
Yeah, absolutely true.
So I know you have more to say about the jobs number.
Well, how about for the month of February? They only underestimated by 65%.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah.
What did we say when we read that number? This is ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
They come in at, what, 20,000?
It was,
revised it. Now, granted, the revision was only 33%, but they were up by 65%.
Yeah.
And, you know, you depend on these things. This is not just something that you're given free. There are reasons that we have these statisticians in the government. And a lot of people and a lot of companies make a lot of decisions based on what those numbers are produced or what numbers are produced and what it means long run. And when we get a period of time like we've been having lately where the inaccuracies are so dramatic that it tells you that nothing that you are listening to has much validity right now, which is why I've been warning you about it for a month on the show. Don't take anything at face value when you hear it from the numbers people for a while yet. It is beginning to improve. And the reason that I'm trusting this first number for the jobs and unemployment jobs, it was well verified by ADP. ADP was a little lower, but it was in the right range.
But it was a lot higher last month, so.
And there's a great disruption still in the household survey, which is also done by the BLS. It does the establishment survey. Those numbers came in negative, but it wasn't for the reason you might think. It was because people are leaving the workforce faster than they're coming in right now. So the size of the workforce is shrinking again. I thought about that for quite a while, and my deduction is that a lot of people my age, and you know, plus or minus a little bit, are now comfortable enough with their assets and their retirement plans and so on that their plans to retire are starting to take place.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we're losing in the workforce is the 60-odd-year-old people who are finally hanging it up after feeling the pressure since 08, 09 that they couldn't ever retire. I think now they're finally relaxing and doing so.
This is an economic trend that I've been trying to get numbers on, but it's actually very difficult. But I think it's affecting a number of things. One is what I just talked about in the salary data, the wages data. I think there are a lot more high-earning baby boomers retiring now than there were 5 years ago. And I think they delayed it because of 08. And they're just now getting to a point where they feel comfortable.
Well, finally, thinking about this the other day too, we do 10-year look-backs for a lot of our clients when we're illustrating things. And the strangest thing is happening now. The quarter that we just ended celebrates 10 years from the beginning of the recovery in the market.
Yeah.
So forward now, when you look back 10 years, all of that 2007, 8, 9 stuff is gone off the 10 years.
It is.
I think that is allowing people to actually start forgetting how bad it really was back then.
It doesn't hurt.
No. You know, 1929 and 2007, 8, and 9, to me, those were the once-in-a-generational things that might happen, maybe even more than a generation, once-in-a-100-year things, perhaps, that you probably, if you're alive today, aren't going to see anything like that again. Could you? Sure. Will you? Not very likely.
No.
I honestly believe we're in such better shape now than we were back in 7, 8, 9. Things have just gotten too crazy out there. And this time, if we get that way again, I for one, and a lot of people like me, we're going to realize that we're going back where we were. We're not there, folks.
It's not going to happen like that again,
no.
Though. The next time it'll be different. And it sounds like that old saying, this time will be different.
Yeah.
But it really will, because you won't see it coming. And that's what I was saying when in January everyone was saying the recession is imminent.
Mm-hmm.
Said, no, they don't announce themselves to you, or else it would be easy to predict when it was coming. It doesn't work like that.
What was their proof that the recession is imminent?
Well, okay, so it was like a vicious cycle. It was, oh, the stock market's going down. A recession is coming. A recession is coming because the stock market is going down. And they just kept pointing at each other.
Like one is cause and one's effect, either direction.
Yeah.
You know, the stock market follows business. Business doesn't follow the stock market. But I think there's even more to it. That what they were looking at was the hair on fire inversion in the yield curve. That when the yield curve inverts,
but that was,
oh,
not,
my God.
That wasn't even a true inversion.
No.
That just happened recently.
And guess what happened this week?
Yeah, it went right
away.
Yeah. Well, that actually, I think that had worked itself out the week before.
It could have. When you pick out one little thing and you say, this is proof that I'm right, usually you're wrong.
Yeah.
Now, I've got a list here of the 18 numbers that prove a recession is imminent by noted historical economist. I'm not going to give you that name until afterwards.
All right.
Because it's so funny. But don't worry about it. I'm literally unconcerned about a recession coming soon. The CEOs of the world that are out there hiring people right and left and wishing they could hire a bunch more right and left, they know a lot more than the idiots who are paid to be talking heads in newspapers and the liberal media and so on. Do not trust what you hear, as Marvin Gaye said, believe half of what you see and none of what you hear. And you'll be a lot better off, except between 10 and 11 on Saturdays. We'll be right back. This is the Bandley Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Bandley Financial Hour. I'm Steve Bandley.
And I'm Adam Bandley.
And we have a trivia question wide open yet. On the year that follows a golden cross in the S&P 500, what has been the average performance of that index for the following year? We know it's above plus 3%. Ah, yes. We could enter a recession later this year or next. But according to the economic collapse and its numbers, a recession could hit sooner than virtually anyone aside from who? I'll get back to that in a moment. So here are some of the things. The 18 numbers, farm loan delinquencies, U.S. exports decline, JCPenney's closing stores, Victoria's Secret's closing stores, Gap announced it'll be closing stores. Tesla is closing its physical sales facilities. Baltic Dry Index, down the line. And we get down to more than 7 million people are behind on auto loan payments. And it appears that the recovery has finally come to an end, according to this sage economist. After seeing all those numbers, there's no way that anyone can possibly claim that economic conditions are getting better. And even though official government numbers are highly manipulated, we had never seen a boom year throughout the entire recovery.
Wait, what?
Huh? I have no idea what that sentence means. That's why I circled it. The next crisis will be soon. The everything bubble is bursting. The perfect storm is coming, and all of our lives will never be the same again. But that doesn't mean there isn't hope. In fact, once things really start getting crazy, hope is going to be one of the major themes in my work because people are really going to need it. There will be great challenges and life will be very different, but that doesn't mean that life is over. America is about to experience the consequences of decades of exceedingly foolish decisions, and the pain will be extreme, but difficult times also offer an opportunity for dramatic change, and that is something that we will need to embrace, by noted economic genius David Stockman. People my age, you're probably already laughing. Young people, look it up. Wow. Very strange.
Well, that was a lot of words that meant nothing.
That's every time he opens his mouth, that's exactly what we get.
All right. So a couple of things. One was the retail sales report this month. It came out this week, and it looked disappointing. It was actually down 0.2%. However, you have to dig into the report as usual. And if you go back to January initially came in at an increase of 0.2%, but it was revised up by 0.5%.
Yeah. You thought the 65% miss on the jobs was bad?
Yeah.
How about a 250% miss?
Whoops. So yeah, the government underestimated the increase in retail sales in January by 250%. And that made the overall gain in the numbers up 0.3%, which is actually a great number. So retail, look, you just read a list of companies that are closing stores, and that has nothing to do with the strength of the economy.
Death by Amazon.
That's all it is. All of those things that they sell can be purchased online for half the price. That's why they're closing. If you work in one of those industries and you're worried about your job, you should be. Look somewhere else.
Apply to Amazon.
Yeah, that's just the way that things are trending. This week, just to confirm that, this week retail sales were higher online than they were in stores for the first time ever.
That's the Amazon Golden Cross.
And just pull up that chart if you have a minute and look at it, and it is not going to reverse. But there was one number that's increasing and one number that's decreasing, and this week they flip-flopped, and it's not going to stop.
We are finally seeing a little bit of a softening in the food and beverage in restaurants and bars numbers.
Yeah, I mean, they really couldn't go anywhere but down.
They got up to even. Remember, you were talking about it last year, how they had broken even with grocery stores, so eating home and eating out were costing Americans about the same. But you know, and I know, what the cost curve has been like when you go out to eat. And I think people are finally just wising up to the fact that, A, this stuff's really expensive.
Yeah, well, there's a critical mass there, too, that you're going to hit. It's got a hard ceiling. You can't continue to increase and just replace. People want to eat at home sometimes.
And you know what else is improving a little bit is the national savings rate. People are actually starting to pay a little bit of attention to the money they're saving. I link that directly to the performance of the stock market.
Oh, I thought it was our show telling people to do it.
Well, that's probably 90%. I was looking for the other 10.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that probably has something to do with it. The other thing is that when you do have more disposable income, you'll go out and spend it typically, but it also allows you to save a little bit more. It's not the American way, but it is. We wish it was.
And automobile sales are perking up again, and that means people are feeling like they have a little money in their pocket.
Yeah, for sure. That's probably the biggest sign that people are feeling wealthier is when you see auto sales.
This economy needs an uptick in the auto industry. You know, the long-run trend is always going to be there. We're going toward less and less cars.
Yeah,
just be the way it is with the young people, the Ubers and the Lyfts and all those things. And it is going to be an uptick in a long-term downtrend. But we need that. And all we got to do is improve our market share of what's made here, which is exactly what Trump is doing. And we can put off the pain and suffering caused by fewer and fewer sales. Just make more of them here.
I also think there's a little bit of a aftershock effect from the financial crisis. So when that hit in 08... no one bought cars,
right.
And everyone made their current car last a lot longer until about 11 to 13. They started really buying cars again. And so I think that compressed a lot of the sales into those years. And then we're kind of seeing the hangover effect from that.
Well, yeah,
and eventually it'll ramp up again.
The car makers are shooting themselves in the foot. And I'd like to thank each and every one of them by building such better machinery nowadays.
Well, competition's a great thing, isn't it?
Isn't it, though? When you're competing with Toyota and Lexus and everybody, you better do a good job or they're going to eat your lunch.
All right, last point. What is arguably the least Trump favorable part of the country? What area hates him the most?
Oh, somewhere west of the mountains in California, I would think.
I would put it solidly in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had a reason to be out there recently, and guess what I saw as I drove or was riding in an Uber.
Sure wasn't Trump signs on all the front lawns.
No doubt. Well, there were some, but they weren't very complimentary.
I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah. So as we drove through San Francisco to get to my destination, I was actually amazed by the amount of tall cranes that on the skyline, which means that they're building new buildings, skyscrapers. And so I asked some of the locals about it, and they said, yeah, it's been like that for the last few years now. I mean, it's just booming out here. And we knew that. Silicon Valley is, I mean, that there's a reason that it's one of the most expensive real estate spots in the entire world. It's just everything is booming in the Bay Area. And that is, it's a little bit ironic considering how much they are the ones pushing the narrative that the economy is going in the tank.
Yeah, so, they don't see that. They don't understand. Some people get up and look in a mirror and all they see is logic when all I see is confusion looking not in my mirror but theirs. If you don't,
yeah, it was,
the wonderful thing about being a West Coast liberal is you don't have to make sense of all the things that you say. You can contradict yourself and it's okay. Because nobody's going to correct you.
That's true, because
out
you're,
there.
Yeah, you're in a little bit of a bubble.
Can't imagine. You know, Adam came home saying all, of course, the wonderful things about California, because California has some wonderful things.
It's truly beautiful. But I mean, it really
no
is.
Place to live.
No, I wouldn't want to live there. But man, it's fun to visit, and the landscape and it's just incredibly beautiful out there.
Mm-hmm. Friends that lived there very few years ago, spent about a year out there, and they come back. just shaking their heads. These people are nuts. Beautiful weather, beautiful everything. The food, fresh food especially, is everywhere and it's wonderful. But the people are nuts. What can you say? Oh, well, a couple things. How do you try real hard to ruin a good stock market? Well, there's several ways. One of them, of course, would be the Green New Deal. Remember Michael Crichton, Jurassic Park,
sure,
and others?
One of my favorites.
This was from him. I want to pause here and talk about this notion of consensus and the rise of what has been called consensus science. I regard consensus science as an extremely pernicious development that ought to be stamped out of its tracks. Historically, the claim of consensus has been the first refuge of scoundrels. It is a way to avoid debate by claiming that the matter is already settled. When you hear the consensus of scientists agrees on something, reach for your wallet because you're being had. Let's be clear, the work of science has nothing to do with consensus. Consensus is the business of politics. Science, on the contrary, requires only one investigator who happens to be right, which means that he or she has results that are verifiable. Does that remind you of anything?
Yeah, a lot.
He's a pretty smart guy, scientist, economist, etc. We'll be right back. Don't go away. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Call Troy at 662-9794. Trivia question is still out there. What's been the average annual performance for the year immediately following a Golden Cross on the S&P 500? It is a number greater than 3. Right, if you look at all of the stupidity that's out there regarding taxes and economics and such, you won't have time to do anything else, first off, because there's so much of it. So I like to really cut to the chase and narrow it down for you. This week's winner is esteemed Senator Ron Wyden from Oregon.
Yeah, Oregon. This is a doozy. This is really good.
This guy has produced numerous little witticisms, one arguably dumber than the next one, and so on and so forth. But he just shot the moon on this one. He wants to make capital gains tax due annually. But what does that mean?
What does that mean?
Well, let's say that you bought 100 shares of Amazon, and at the end of the year, that 100 shares of Amazon had increased in price by
50%.
Yeah, which kind of happened with Amazon once in a while. So you've got a whole bunch more net worth. How much money do you have more than you had when you bought that?
In actual cash, you have zero.
Zero. And therefore, the government should not tax things that aren't somehow connected with having money. So capital gains has always meant that upon the sale of something, the difference between what you paid for it and what you sell it for is some measure called a capital gain or perhaps a capital loss. Sometimes these things go down. So at that point, that transaction becomes taxable. If you make a gain, you pay tax on the gain. If you take a loss, you don't get a refund on it, but you can carry it forward against another gain, and hopefully, over time, you'll get it all back. So what Wyden wants to do is every year, for every taxpayer, you have to add up what the value of all your assets is, and on whatever value increase you've incurred, you're going to have to pay taxes. Now, with what money you're going to pay those, I don't know. And what about your home? Let's say your home was worth $200,000 a year ago, and it's worth $220,000. This year. Well, that's not going to be a taxable gain when you sell it because you get the first $250,000, $500 for a couple, for free. So is he going to tax that too and then refund it when you sell it? Well, you know, those are the little details we haven't talked about yet, right? Adam was talking. Go ahead and tell the story.
So
during the recession.
On an annual basis, this wouldn't be a big deal, except if you really had a lot of money invested in stocks or in a private company or something like that. But when it is a big deal is when markets do things like they did in 2008. So in 2008, stockholders lost an estimated $6.9 trillion and homeowners lost $3.3 trillion.
Yeah.
Which means that if you add those two numbers together and we had this law, that citizens of the United States would have been owed $1 trillion by the government. Now, do you think the government's going to cut us all a check, or are they just going to say, here's an IOU that's as good as cash, or how does that work? I mean, you're not going to get the government keeps your money from taxes all year, and then you file, and then it gives it back to you with no interest and no penalties for them. If you do the opposite, you owe interest and penalties to the government. So you can imagine how favorable they're going to treat us when markets go down.
And where is the devil always? Down there in the details somewhere?
Always.
So for every proposal like this, there are reasons and there are excuses. And it's interesting sorting them out. Let's see. It would require wealthy investors to pay the capital gains tax on the appreciation of their assets each year rather than paying capital gains once when it's sold. Oh, okay. Well, that's pretty simple, isn't it? Of course, they can all afford it because they're wealthy people with investments.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's what an excuse. Now, here's the quote. This eliminates serious loopholes that allow some to pay a lower rate than wage earners to delay their taxes indefinitely and in some cases to avoid paying tax at all, Wyden said in a statement Tuesday. Well, that's true. If you happen to die with that asset and your estate is under $11.5 million, it's going to go to your heirs, and it's going to go free. Now, that, of course, is just egregious, is it not?
Oh.
Because all money is their money.
Right. But they just loan it to us.
This is called, and this is only one version of this, but it's called mark-to-market taxation. And for those of you in the nerd class with us, mark-to-market became a big thing in the Great Recession, where the assets that were toxic, as they like to say back then, had to be written down to the market. Now, that wasn't going to make these banks pay taxes on them, but it was certainly going to upset their balance sheets.
Mm-hmm.
So that I don't want to get into GAAP accounting, general accounting principles, because it's way too complicated, although I do have some other stuff on that I'll get to. But anyway, that's obviously what? That is an excuse. This would slow down the ability of billionaires to accumulate massive fortunes very rapidly. Huh. Now, that means that the accumulation of fortunes is a bad thing, right?
Right, because no one in the United States would be trying to achieve that during their lifetime.
Well, I can verify that that's such a bad idea because no less than other noted economist Elizabeth Warren has proposed a 2% wealth tax on estates over $50 million. So you don't even have to have an appreciation of your assets that year, and you still get to pay 2%.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's called a wealth tax, folks. And that, again, is an excuse. It would dampen investors' incentive to save, said American Express or whatever. And that, of course, is true. But now, where are we going with this? I said there were excuses and there are reasons. Last page, last sentence. David Miller, a tax lawyer at law firm Proskauer Rose LLP, estimates that a mark-to-market system on a small fraction of the top 1% would raise hundreds of billions of dollars of new revenue over a decade. Okay, now you've just heard the reason. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, gentlemen. Quick trivia shot.
Good. Go for it.
I consulted with my doggy, 5%.
Still too low.
Too low?
Yep.
Yeah.
See, this is supposed to generate excitement. Yeah, because we've just had it now. What are you looking forward to? Well, stay
more
tuned.
Than 5%, apparently.
If we don't get the answer in another two or three minutes, I'll let you know.
But I didn't go on my gut. Okay, that's what happens. Okay.
We appreciate the call. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Like I said, you now know the reason. They want your money, folks, and it's really weird. Speaking of taxes, I mentioned last week about domicile versus residence. There are a lot of states who are very, very strict about what is your residence and what's your domicile. And what does it mean? It means you can be taxed in more than one state. And It also means that you can declare a state your domicile, but if you don't go through the actions of having it become a domicile, you are going to get nailed on your taxes. So it's very state-dependent. If you spend 184 days in Florida and try to declare it your domicile, ain't going to fly, folks, and especially if you came from New Jersey or New York. Many states, New York and New Jersey among them, consider an individual a statutory resident if they maintain a home in that state for all or most of the year and they spend at least half of the year within the state. Okay, others may have a threshold of 200 days, and you just never know. But in order to become to change your domicile, the experts recommend that if you're moving from a state such as New York, New Jersey, or in my case, Wisconsin, you sell your old place and you move to the new one and you buy something there, not in that order. They would much prefer you buy first and then sell. Also, do not claim your new residence and your new domicile on January 1, because nobody moves on January 1, and they want their pro rata money. So if you don't move until even January 15th, the old state is still entitled to some of your revenue from that year. Be very, very careful, all you snowbirds. If you're trying to do this right, get rid of all the old ties in the other state if you can. Just a little word to the wise. In the few times that we have had a golden cross over the years on the S&P 500 index, the following 12 months have seen the index rise 11.5%. We just had one. Will it happen? I'll let you know. Next year on this date, not before. Thanks for listening. As always, we had a good time. We appreciate it. Get back next week where we will be exactly in the same place. This is the Banwi Financial Hour, over and out in April.